Federal contractors may have to offer up to 7 days of paid sick leave a year for their employees under a new executive order from President Obama. Industry is not thrilled about it. They're writing to the White House saying more regulations make a complicated acquisition process more difficult. Charles Tiefer is a law professor at the University of Baltimore and a member of the Commission on Wartime Contracting in Iraq and Afghanistan, writing for Forbes.com, saying that industry shouldn't get too worried about this executive order. Professor, it's wonderful to have you back in the program. I know that writers do not always choose the headlines for their pieces. My takeaway, though, from the headline in your Forbes piece, "Watch Federal Contractors Stall and Dilute Obama's Order on Paid Sick Leave," leads me to believe that you don't think this is such a big deal. Is that a fair read on my part, Professor? Thanks for your time today.
Oh, I love your show. I'm glad to be back. I do think that its reach will be narrower less than observers think, because they're not familiar with the way the boundaries get drawn. A lot, for example, in theory, the sick leave order, like the other executive orders of this kind by President Obama, will reach not only contractors, who are a limited set, but subcontractors, which is the way you would get out further into the economy. But the way these orders are written, they have rather, I don't want to say feeble, but weak ways of reaching out to subcontractors. And so just not as many contractors will be reached.
You write about three main points in this Forbes piece, and we have a link to it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The first point that you make is that industry's made it clear it will oppose these orders in court. You write about a conservative judiciary who you expect to hear the case of the contracting organization sympathetically. That, I imagine, goes to the delaying piece, the stalling piece that you're alluding to in this.
That's right. I think that if a, I regret that it's the case, but I think that a conservative judge says I have my doubts about whether this is authorized, and he or she may stay the regulation, say, well, I'm not going to let it go into effect while we hear this case, and the same may happen at the appellate level. Well, we're not going to let this go into effect until we decide this case, and by the end of that, you're in the next president's term.
And at that point, another president can issue an executive order rescinding a previous executive order. That happens all the time, especially in the first year of a new president's administration.
Exactly right. There's been a sort of revolving door when a Democratic president succeeds a Republican one, or vice versa. The ink is not even dry on the executive order from the previous administration, and it's wiped out.
You're right. It's not to govern all companies, the power that the president has to issue executive orders. It's not to govern all companies, just federal contractors, and it must promote good government contracting, not just a better society. Is it possible that these companies could argue to the court that that this executive order ordering the sick leave is contrary to better government contracting because it adds a cost to contracting that the taxpayers wind up bearing?
Well, while I myself think that these executive orders are justified, this contractor type of argument is similar to one in this past term. The Supreme Court said that you needed more cost-benefit analysis for EPA regulations. Well, that same kind of argument would say, in effect, you need cost-benefit proof that this produces better government contracting, not just better, not just that paid sick leave is better for the economy generally or better for people generally. And they may say, we just don't see in the record here the kind of cost-benefit analysis we're demanding.
I take your point about the efficacy of it and the justification for it, and I don't propose to argue or settle that here, but it strikes me that that would be logical for the contracting organizations to at least argue if and when this does go to court, Professor. The second point that you make is there's a limit to how many contractors will even accept coverage by the order. What do you mean by accepting coverage by the order?
Well, if they say that there's a reason, for example, a subcontractor And by a subcontractor, you can talk about someone who does a major part of the work on federal highways, only they're not the general contractor for it. Or you can talk about a computer parts supplier, which sells enormous amounts of goods, but not directly to the federal government, but instead through Apple or through other Samsung, whatever. Those are subcontractors. They can say, oh, we don't think we're covered because we're commercial in nature, and therefore we don't think we have to have paid sick leave. We don't think we have to do any of these things. We're commercial in nature, and even if that's highly dubious, by the fact that they take that position, they have said, we're not going to accept coverage, and you start asking, is there going to be instant enforcement against them? And the answer is no, that's kind of watered down what will happen.
Yeah, that was my question as I read your piece, is who would go around and check if somebody decided, especially if they could demonstrate that they were not directly selling to the government, that this is trickling down sufficiently to that revenue-wise they should be considered as a kind of a de facto government contractor.
That's exactly right, and there's plenty of work here, I hate to say, in a sense I hate to say, for graduates of the University of Baltimore Law School and other law schools who do government contracting to write memos to the file saying we've analyzed the situation and our client is not covered, and to get out of it that way. A similar pattern has been that government contractors are, of course, supposed to provide subcontracting plans to the federal government, showing they're going to hire small businesses as subcontractors. You know those things are honored more in the breach than in the observance.
The third point that you make in your piece in Forbes.com, Professor Tiefer, is something that we touched on moments ago, and that is that it takes years to implement an executive order. You eloquently write, do not imagine President Obama issues it on Monday and the covered contractors snap to attention Tuesday. There certainly is an implementation curve.
Francis, do you ever figure that if you comment a week late on the issuance of an executive order, it'll all be over by then? you're exactly. And these happen to have a more complicated evolution even than the normal situation. These are not these come down through OMB, through OFFP. And then they bring in from the side the Department of Labor. And so there's an initial proposal, and then there are at least one round of drafts, maybe two rounds of drafts. Each of these get lengthy commenting. To some extent, these are entirely new propositions. We're not building on an existing structure of paid sick leave regulations. It takes a long time before you get to the final bottom line of a contract being awarded that has the clauses in it that impose these requirements.
I looked at the details as linked in the New York Times report through your piece on Forbes.com. And the January 2017 is the proposed start date for this. Given the timeline that you talked about at the beginning of our conversation and now just a moment ago once again, it's entirely possible the government might never let a contract with the provisions of this included, isn't it?
Well, if 1 year later, if 1 year after the proposed executive order goes into effect, a Republican president were elected, then what you just said could very well happen. It would not have been implemented in terms of an awarded contract with a clause in it. It would not have been implemented in that 1 year, and the incoming Republican president tears it up, and it never happens. Yes, as you say.
If it takes effect January 1, 17, President Obama's successor will take office January 20th, January is a reasonably busy month for government contracting, of course. They all are. But depending on the nature of the contracts that are let between January 1 and January 20th, somebody who comes into office and might be excited about doing away with this could do it late in the afternoon on January 20th, and that'd be the end of it.
you wouldn't, people would hardly even notice. They would be so focused on the other things that the incoming president does that only the true cognoscenti, the true insiders watching closely would say, oh, look, it happened as we feared, it's dead.